Last show before the playoffs. Stanley Cup playoffs have arrived. Best first round in all of sports, no question about it. You can debate. You can debate which playoffs you like the most. I've always thought that the which playoffs do you like the most debate was more which sport elevates your interest the most, right? Like if you're a hockey fan and you say your favorite is the Stanley Cup playoffs, I go, yeah, obviously, right? You're a basketball fan, you go, NBA playoffs, my favorite, yeah, yeah. I'm saying, when I go, which is your favorite, that's to me, the question is, which one is the baseline jump the highest? Which one does the interest of, yeah, I kind of like that sport, or that's enjoyable too. No, I watch that every year. That's always the barometer for me. Anyway, I think a lot of people, again, feel the exact same way about this, which is, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs and it's the playoffs, okay? For you to just gin up pure, unbridled excitement is difficult. And the people who tell you to be positive and to be just, you know, say they're going to, yeah, it's annoying. It's actually more annoying than the people who are just doom spiraling and who go, they have no chance. It's the same thing. It's almost like politics when the two sides are fighting each other and you go, yeah, you know what? The extremes of both of your sides are, you know, just horrible. No one wants to hear from either of you. And so I think it's actually the same when it comes to Leaf fans. If you're just going, Bruins in five, ugh. And if you're doing the whole, be positive, the team needs you now. Please don't ever interact with me. Please, 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 please. I'm begging you not to. What I think is where I've landed. This has got to be the time for the Toronto Maple Leafs where they get this thing done. The Bruins are on the decline and the Leafs are supposed to be on the way up. And it was one thing when your stars were young to lose to a Boston Bruins team that was in their prime and they were well coached and they had stars in the lineup. They still had Zdeno Chara and they still had Brad Marchand at the peak of his powers and they still had Patrice Bergeron and they had an up-and-coming nasty David Pastrnak. Yes, fine, whatever. This is a different time. And did the Bruins finish higher in the standings? Absolutely, they did. Did the Bruins and Leafs both have the two strongest schedules in the second half of the season? Absolutely, they did. You know who had the better second half? The Toronto Maple Leafs. You know who's got stars entering their prime? All of them? The Toronto Maple Leafs. I read a great article yesterday about Charlie Coyle by one of our guests today, Fluto Shinzawa of The Athletic. And it was outlining just the seasons that these guys had and that they exceeded the point total of Patrice Bergeron last year, both of them, Zaka and Coyle. And they went on to describe both these guys' games, and I went, man, this is kind of spooky from the standpoint of their big, heavy centers that win draws, that can play 200-foot games. John Tavares and Auston Matthews have to be better than those two guys. I almost got, like, tricked into thinking that, oh, maybe the advantage isn't that big. No. Toronto has to dominate this series. They got to win this series. I know it's going to go seven games. It's almost predictable. I think that there's some charts. The old predictive charts have it as like a 34% chance it goes to seven games, which is pretty good, which is something to consider if you're going to place a wager on this series. But yeah, it's time for these guys to take a step forward in the postseason and do it with some conviction. And I want to point out two things. One is this, and this was actually something that gave me a real feeling of optimism moving forward. And that was a quote from Auston Matthews that I actually missed after the Tampa game. It was this, quote, on the 50 goal, or sorry, I keep saying on the 50 goal chase because 50 goals is what my brain goes to when you think of a real great accomplishment in goal scoring. On the 70 goal chase in which he had, the craziest, just insane thing that's happened is 69 goals, and we went, oh, this wish he got one more. He said, quote, I wanted it for sure, but you know, it just wasn't meant to be. When you turn the page, the most important thing is the team and the team success and making sure that I'm pulling my weight and doing what I can as a leader on this team and individually to help the team win, especially as we go into the postseason. So that's where my focus is. And I think that's the kind of mindset we've had all year. Then he said this, quote, definitely not how we want to be going into the postseason. And I don't think that we can just go and turn it on Saturday. This is where we want to have success. And this is where we want to make sure that we're elevating our game. And for myself individually, want to take another step, end quote. I think this guy gets it. I think this guy understands what's at stake here. It's great to have. No one can debate whether Auston Matthews is now the greatest goal scorer on planet Earth. That is just, it's bona fide. You go back to the very beginning of his career, 5-on-5, everything. He is the best goal scorer on the planet. Really, the only debate as his career is going to go on is where he stacks amongst the Ovechkins and the Gretzkys, flat out. Like, those are going to be the only guys that you can probably compare him to at any point in time. Maybe like Brett Hull getting the release off and the way his release impacted the game versus what Matthews did. Because, again, I mentioned it, we're old. We're going to start seeing more Connor Bedards, more kids that try to emulate Auston Matthews. He is going to have, I don't want to say the Steph Curry effect on hockey shooting because that's a little grandiose, but he's going to influence players in terms of the way that they shoot the puck. He is going to have an impact on young goal scorers moving forward, especially since, you know, he's the best player on the team with the most fans on planet Earth. But if you want to go from, hey, you're the greatest goal scorer on planet Earth, to you're one of the greatest players on planet Earth, it comes through the Stanley Cup playoffs. There's a reason why we revere Nathan MacKinnon in a different way, why we revere Nikita Kucherov in a different way. While we talk about, I mean, Connor McDavid hasn't won, but again, he gets a little bit of the lenient circumstances considering he is unequivocally the best player on planet Earth. You can put Zach Hyman out there as a bumper player for him. He turns him into a 50-goal scorer. No offense to Zach. You know I love him. But, yeah, let's look at a lot of those goals and where they were scored from and how they were accumulated. But, yeah, this is a massive legacy series for Auston Matthews, and I think this is a real growing up series in terms of him trying to find his place amongst the greatest players in hockey. Jason Buchla, senior, former Panthers director of amateur scouting and Sportsnet hockey analyst. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Good morning. Doing fantastic. I agree with you about the legacy series here. I think that it's going to be on both sides of the ledger, though, isn't it? Because Boston coming off that season they had last year and then bowing out, and then you see the exits, the Bergerons and, you know, the Krejcis leaving town, or probably not leaving town, retiring, and then these other guys picking up the torch. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. I think it's really one of the more compelling series when you look across the entire landscape of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But the thing is, for Matthews and Marner and Nylander, what feels so different to me, and even Morgan Riley, I'll lump him into this, is that these guys are all in the what is supposed to be now the heart of their primes. You know, like, this is your, what, when you're an athlete, it's basically right between your 26 and 28 seasons. Auston Matthews is 26 years old now. So it's one thing to have these heartbreaking playoff losses when you're in your early 20s. It's one thing to have that happen and go, okay, well, it's not supposed to define you, right? Just like all of us, when we make mistakes as kids, people go, oh, he's just a kid. He's just a kid. Like, give him a break, cut him some slack, blah, 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 blah. Now I think the slack cutting time for these guys, it's over with. Boston, it's about picking up the slack of the prior generation, but they're clearly in a transitional period. Like, that's what they're going to be entering, even though they were super successful. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's, hey, if you are what you're supposed to be and what you've always thought you were and the reason why you kept this band together, let's see it now, because you're all in your prime. There's no more growing up. This is who you are.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you take a look at the roster, the way it's assembled right now too, like, I actually believe, like, a year ago, JD, when we made those trade deadline acquisitions and we kind of ran it out there and we we're kind of shoving it down everybody's throats that we're different now. You know what I mean? Like, down that stretch of whatever, a month and a half leading into playoffs, we're going to be harder to play against come playoffs. This version of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I mean, it's had some ebbs and flows, obviously, and they're not a perfect outfit, but I would say that on balance, they are a more difficult team to play against. It doesn't jump out at you, but I do believe that the group is programmed better that way. So if I do believe that, it should open up more opportunities for your skill guys to do what they do best. And to your point, this is the time of year they have to go to a different level. Absolutely. I mean, John Tavares is, I don't know what the version of him is going to be next year. So let's lump him into, like, this could be the last kind of kick at the can to be potentially the best version of whatever he has left. And then certainly these other guys, you're absolutely right. Like, we're 8 years into the league here. Yep. That's an eternity. Like, that's a career already.
Yep.
So it's time.
Yep. Okay, so Keith mentioned the other night when they lost to Tampa that, Yeah, he basically shifted from coach of we got to stay focused, we got to stay locked in on these games. Hey, the goal chase is a distraction. Fans don't cheer, please, when we're watching Austin Matthews touch the puck, too. He was himself scouting this Bruins team in between periods. So what does that look like for the coaching staff right now, for everybody involved? What is it that they're looking for, and how does it change in terms of what you get from a scouting and a coaching department from the regular season when you're facing the Bruins to what you're looking for and what you're spending your time on now?
So I believe that the Boston Bruins are a pretty predictable outfit. Like, they only play the game, they have to play the game a certain way to have team success. If you look at the way that the roster is assembled, I mean, after Pasternak, like the drop off to get to Marshall in the two holes scoring wise, it's monstrous. Like, you know, Pasternak obviously is the guy you're going to have to key in on. But, you know, don't lose focus of the entire group, because here's the thing. I believe that if we just get pigeonholed into worrying about Pasternak, for example, we're going to take away from what we can do well, and that is hopefully run a little bit of a track meet with some grit out of the Bertuzzis and the Domies. The thing with the Boston Bruins is, like, when you get into the Coils and the Zachas and the McAvoys and even further on down, like the Fredericks, these types of guys, they really wear on you, JD, like physically. And if you look at the top, like the core, if you want to lump Riley in there and McAvoy in there for Boston, so you run it down like Pasternak, Marchand, Coyle, Zacha, McAvoy, that kind of thing, you know, that group has over 200 more hits than the Toronto Maple Leafs top five. So what's that say? They got to wear you down. You know what I mean? For success, for team success, they got to lean on you. They got to wear you down. The more that we can have, if I can get 10 or 15% more pushback out of my core and then complement it with these other guys, Bertuzzi, Domi, et cetera, to wear down Boston, I like our odds that way. So, you know, there's a couple of things in here. You know, the penalty kill in Boston has been exceptional since March. I mean, it's been really good. Top five in the league. I think it's around 86%, where the Leafs have been sputtering on the power play, like 12%. So it's going to come down to special teams for sure. And then the obviously the outlier here, and it's not really an outlier. It's going to become very obvious very quickly. It's going to be the goaltending for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, I'm starting Swayman if I'm Boston. He's 3-0 against the Leafs. I don't know, his goals against like 1.3960 save percent and some ridiculous like that. And we need saves in Toronto, so that's going to be the good or the bad.
Yeah. So my only thing with the pushback stuff is I agree with you that you always were searching for a little bit more of it from the core players, right? But to me, it's going to be them more not fading away from the tough areas, because Boston, the thing that they do so well is take away the middle of the ice, right? That's what they're going to try to do to Toronto this entire series. No middle of the ice. And then, yeah, like you said, lean on them physically, physical, 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 and hope that those players will, because frankly, those core guys have in the Stanley Cup playoffs in the past. But what I found in the Boston matchups in the regular season was a lot of people were really excited about how, you know, the Domies and Bertuzzi and a lot of these guys were getting mixed up and getting into dust-ups with Boston's players. And I went, okay, that is nice. I do love seeing them come together as a team, and I'm not criticizing them, certainly, but it did feel at times as though they were playing into Boston's hand. Like, Boston is winning these games, but Toronto is going, no, but we're still tough enough to hang with you. And I wonder what you think about that balance in terms of these guys just saying, hey, we want to be physical, we want to respond to the physicality, but we don't want to just start feeling like we're chasing the game in that way in this series.
Yeah, I agree with that too. So part of Boston's strategy has always been they like to get inside the head of their opponent, you know, the Marchands and these guys. And they, you know, when they're wearing you down, there's extra stuff after the whistles all the time. And, you know, you're going to get a lot of that. That's just the way that they're programmed and the way that they try. And it's like the game within the game, you know, it's like those types of scenarios. But I'm with you. Like, here's what I want to do. I want to answer the bell between the whistles. I want to play fast. I want to play hard. I don't need Domi and Bertuzzi to be over the moon physical. I don't need that out of them. But what I need them is to have be in the fight all the time. And then when it's over, don't get linked into something where, you know, because Domi can go that way. We've seen it. That's his MO. It's okay. I like that about him. But at the same time, we have to be dictating, you know, that type of mental side of the game. And that's going to be interesting to watch as well, as the tone is set here. You know that Max is amped up, provided he's healthy enough, and I'm sure he is. He's amped up more than anybody for this playoffs, you know, given, you know, the history with his dad and stuff like that. This means something different to him as well. So, curious to see how that part of it goes to the just the mental aspect, because, you know, Marchand, right from the drop of the puck, is going to be trying to get inside the Leafs' cranium.
Yeah, and that's it. And so, to me, the toughness is not going to be whether those one of those guys fights or, you know,
no.
It's always nice if Matthews puts a little lumber into somebody after a whistle and has the snarl on his face. I'd love to see Marner not just get face washed and laugh like he's getting bullied in a schoolyard. But ultimately, the toughness for me is going to be if Boston is being nasty and mean and all these different things, and then all of a sudden, you know, Matthews is scoring on the doorstep, or Marner is getting into traffic and creating plays. If Nylander is driving the net consistently throughout the series and you feel like Toronto is getting to the front of the net, that will be the marker to me of, oh, you guys are tough. Like, you guys are doing it different. You realize that that's where you got to score in the postseason.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, you're a high danger areas, you know, the middle of the ice, as you describe it. I mean, Toronto had a hard time getting, listen, a lot of teams have a hard time getting pucks between the hash marks and the offensive zone against the Boston Bruins. It's going to be especially hard at this time of year. I get it. Mm-hmm. But to your point, that's exactly where it's got to be. And that's where I feel a little bit better about it. You know, like, especially Matthews, I really do feel like that part of his game has evolved. You know, we obviously know what he is, you know, goal scoring wise and everything else. But if you look over his last couple of years, JD, like, the little things in his game, you know, contact, face offs, blocking shots, different things like that, they have gone to another level. And I feel like that maturity is definitely evident for me. And that's a big deal.
That's why, you know, I opened the show talking about his quotes and the way that he just quickly shut down the, like, that he was open and honest about wanting 70, but that he also capitulated and admitted that the last four games of the season were not the way they wanted to play. That he was worried about them trying to flip the switch, and that he understands that he needs to get it done in the postseason. No, I agree. I really, really am optimistic about Matthews' progression as a leader and as a player, and I think that he understands the stakes. I am a little bit more, you know, curious about some of the other guys. But okay, let me pivot to this. Where do you think, because Boston is a big, heavy team, takes away the middle of the ice, great goaltending, right? Good special teams. Where do you see them as the most vulnerable in this series? Like, where are they most vulnerable?
Well, if the Leafs can get the upper edge with a little bit more interior game and push the pace between, like, in transition, especially. So win that secondary battle in the defensive zone, even if you chip a puck to space and now you got Nylander, you know, wheeling through the neutral zone with speed, let's just say, okay? Mm-hmm. If you can have it and you can win those little secondary battles more often than Boston, when they don't have the second up front, they don't have the scoring that Toronto has. They don't even have, like, their secondary level, I guess on balance you could say is a little bit better than Toronto's, because, you know, they got like a bunch of guys that are right around 37, 40 points, whatever. But, you know, the more that we on the back end can win these little detailed battles so that we have it more often and we're tracking with it more often, I think that, you know, hopefully that's going to lead to some more power play opportunities early in the series. I will say that, because you and I have been around forever to watch hockey, and the first two games of a playoff series, they'll call it relatively tight. Mm-hmm. After that, it's like a free-for-all, right? You know what I mean? Like, the more they hate each other, the less penalties seem to get called. So we got to set the tone early, playing our way. So it's going to be in and out with the grit. I'm good with that. Don't get suckered into the mental side of it with all the after-whistle crap. Mm-hmm. But push it offensively with pace, do what you do best, and get pucks to the net. The quicker you play, the more chances you're going to have in the middle of the ice.
Mm-hmm. So here's another Matthews positivity stat for you. Matthews versus McAvoy this regular season during the minutes, Toronto outshot the Bruins 40-10, which is pretty significant, okay? I feel pretty good about Matthews, his line, and what they're going to be able to do. And it seems like there's at least a possibility that Boston is going to try to load up against that group. To me, this series is really going to come down to, when we're talking about secondary scoring and forward groups, what happens with Nylander, what happens with Tavares, what happens with Mitch Marner. Do you like the idea of Nylander staying on his own line, spreading that talent out, or do you want to load up that second group for the most part in this series?
He's running cold for me.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
You know, I need him to be the best version of himself, and if that means I'm loading up two lines because I'm getting the best version of him, we can't have him as a passenger. We need for him to have impact. offensively play to his identity. He's done that in the past. Let's be honest. Like, you know, he's never going to be a stalwart defensively, and there's going to be times he, you know, you want him to bump a little bit more. But honestly, last year in playoffs, he was pretty good offensively, played to his identity for the most part. Right now, I don't like him, the look of him for the last 3 weeks, I would say, at least, you know, and over a 10-game segment anyways. It's been pretty pedestrian, so if it means we got to load it up, so be it. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I'm nervous about it too, based on the play. I did feel a little better after talking to Versteeg, where he mentioned that the milestone chase as a player and the mental toll that the regular season can take on you, that maybe you do just flip the switch. And we've seen him do it before, right? Like, there's at least something that you can look back on. But yeah, no goals in your last 11 games and only 4 assists, and then still not finding a way to 100 points when it looked like it was a knock it down easy layup for him. It's not the most encouraging thing. It's a tough question, because you're right, he has not looked good at all, and especially since being placed down on that third line. But also, if you are Toronto, like, isn't that kind of what you're looking for? Is they've got a third line that has James Van Riemsdyk on it. Like, that's where I want Nylander to start to drive play and create opportunities for me. They've got a third pairing that, if they do load up their top group, is going to be fairly weak and exposed. Like, maybe this is the best play for him to get going and kind of prove himself as a player too, and earn that contract.
Yeah, and that's where I'm contradicting myself when I say load him up in the top two, because when you start throwing out names like James Van Riemsdyk in the three hole, he's a plotter, as we all know, and that's the matchup on that side of the ice.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So, like, when he's tracking up the ice or he's on zone exits, you know, defense, JVR, he's a late offensive zone exit guy anyways. But what I'm saying is that you got 4.5 guys for speed, not 5 when JVR is on the ice. So, like, that should open up space for guys like Nylander. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think that speaks to strategy and adjustments, and that's going to be another fascinating thing. I'm interested to hear what your thought is on this. I'm interested to see how Sheldon Keefe strategizes and makes adjustments in this series, because I think that's going to be one of the things that has to evolve even more with his experience now, because, you know, it's. I don't want to say his job's on the line, but let's be honest here. We need to win, right? So it kind of feels like that for me too.
I will say it. His job is on the line. Yeah. Like, I don't have to play politics on this. I can tell you conclusively that they lose in the first round. There is no scenario. I don't even know how that would exist. Like, the only way that it does is if the Leafs decide to fold up and they go, we're done. Because then he's, I guess, the head coach of the Maple Leafs in perpetuity, the final head coach of the Maple Leafs. Like, he's gone if they lose in this first round.
Yeah, for the first round, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm more curious if they were able to win it a round, and we'll circle back what the status would be after that. But absolutely, he's got to get through this round. But he needs to make some adjustments too, like,
Completely,
you know, in-game adjustments. And he's brought on a coaching staff that you know, Guy Boucher, you know, to strategize special teams on the offensive side there, and we got to be the best version of ourselves behind the bench as well.
Yeah. So, well, I had this written down for you, and it was actually where I was going next when we were talking about this, is the discrepancy between the coaching staffs and the way that these two teams are coached. Because when you look at these two teams on paper, especially, you go, all right, I get it. The goaltending is very, very much in the favor of Boston in this series, right? They have two guys that would start for Toronto. And to like, their goaltending is so good that they might break the mold when it comes to goaltending as we know it by having an actual set rotation. I don't know if they'll actually follow through on that, but that is at least being discussed in Boston right now. Like, I read yesterday that Ullmark hasn't played. He played consecutive games this season, not back-to-backs. Consecutive games this season. Guess how many times?
Zero, I bet.
One time. Yeah, one time. So, okay, this is the guy, Vezina, but it's okay, fine, whatever. So they might completely change the game there. I get it. But the way that they're structured, the more that they get out of their talent, I don't think that anyone would say that Toronto has the coaching advantage in the series, even if you think that Sheldon Keefe is a good quality head coach. And if you look back on the postseasons past, that has been one of Toronto's biggest bugaboos. Like, yes, have their stars elevated their play enough? No. Do you go as far as your goaltending and your best players? I completely agree. But Keefe has often been too late to react. And so Yeah, I do think that this is also, when it comes to like a legacy series, hey, can you outcoach a team for the first time in your career? Like, that is going to be very, very, very much on the table for Sheldon Keefe. And so I guess the way I'm going to kick it back to you is, how great of a discrepancy do you see here between the two coaching staffs?
Oh, there's a wide gap here. I mean, but I would say this, though, like Jim Montgomery walks into, Boston, and they have a culture there, JD, that's established in that dressing room, right? So we've been trying to establish a culture in Toronto. I still don't believe that we were there. Like, we're not there. You know, we're kind of on the periphery of it. We have been for a while. But, you know, when Jim Montgomery walks into the room in Boston, there is a culture there. So you have to coach to your strengths, but you also don't get in the way of process that's already been established in the room in terms of the way that the group holds himself accountable, if you will. So I think that's always been a challenge for Sheldon Keefe. Like, there's been times where he's actually called out this group in the past and went in front of us as media people a day later and apologized for being too hard on them the day before. Oof. Which makes me, you know, throw up in my mouth. I'm not going to deny it. So, like, come on. These guys are making $10, $11 million and they can't take a little bit of a whack in the rear end once in a while. Get over yourself. So, yeah, this is him having to take the reins now. Prove it. I'm the leader. Like, you know, gone are the days in Toronto. Or that, remember the presence that a Pat Quinn would have behind the bench. You know what I mean? It was like you knew who was in charge, type of a thing. So to be determined.
Yeah, no, but I think that's a great point. And it's also why these players need to lead by example, go in this series. It is, as much as, like, again, I get it, the goaltending and the special teams and the Boston's blue line and the physical nature in which they play, like the coaching, all this stuff. It's like, okay, but the calculus that the Leafs have made from the very outset of this was that their core four guys, their core four forwards were going to be difference makers in a way that could make, that could push them to victory. And so that's all I want to see here is, okay, you can talk about the culture being set by the head coach. I don't think that that's the case anymore. I think we all understand this. The culture is going to be set by the players. And so here's their opportunity to do it. That said, the other thing that I'm very curious about with this series is how Toronto is going to align their blue line and the way that they're going to go with these pairings. Yeah. And I wonder if you think that Edmondson and Lyubushkin, how crucial they're going to be in terms of counteracting Boston's size and heaviness with their forward groups and the way that they want to play down low.
Yeah, well, I'm curious on Edmondson, I got to be honest. Lyubushkin, I get it, right shot. And, you know, he is what he is. You know, he doesn't do anything with the puck, but he's going to lean on people. So it's going to be key. He's, you know, but under duress, he's going to have to make the proper puck plays. And I'm a little bit concerned on the right side when we start discussing this. I mean, to kind of roundabout answer, or give you an answer here, like, you know, if we're dressing Liljegren and we got Lyubushkin, Liljegren's got the wheels, but does he have the brain under duress, under high leverage situations to make the plays we need at this time of year? Mm-hmm. You know, that's going to be determined. Edmondson he's a six, maybe seven for me. Like, we're kind of, I'm a little perplexed, to be honest with you. Like, Benoit's gone by him, so I see him in higher leverage situations right now for me personally. So, you know, what do you do with Brody, you know, in this mix too? Because Brody, when he plays 22 minutes, but Brody has not been, you know, the best version of himself for, I would say, back to last year's playoffs, to be honest with you. I know he's a plus 17 this year and whatever else, but it doesn't. Edmondson and Lyubushkin, if they establish themselves, you're going to get heavy hard on the one side. You're going to get long and in the way on the other side occasionally. A lot of bump out of Edmondson, but, you know, it's just going to come to the spatial speed down low, like the small area speed stuff, like spinning off of those guys and taking pucks to high danger areas. So their matchups, JD, should be middle six matchups. They should thrive in that. They should be able to assert themselves in that, and the Leafs need them to assert themselves in that.
Game one, I have it. Benoit, McCabe, Lyubushkin, Riley, Edmondson, Liljegren. If it's me, you have the same? That means Brody's out.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. That's where I'm at. But I mean, again, talking about adjustments, I'm not married to anything right now. Oh. I'm not married to my starting goaltender. I'm not married to what I got to do on the back end. Like, it's there's no you know, supposed depth is what we have right now. We've bragged about it. If we have to make a call to the bullpen, let's get it done.
100%. No, I could see. it's really wild to think about this, but I could see in game two different forward groups, different blue line pairings, and a different goaltender. I don't think any of that is off the table for the Leafs.
I know, and that's what scares me. Yeah. To be honest with you, with what I'm talking about, establishing, you know, momentum in the series and process. Like, yeah. There's a difference between a call to the bullpen and a full-on panic attack.
Yeah.
So you got to be cognizant of your game plan.
God, I hope so. Hey, Jason, thanks so much for making time today, brother. Enjoy the series. Enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Can't wait, pal. Enjoy the weekend. I'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. Jason Buchla, former Panthers director of amateur scouting and hockey analyst here for Sportsnet. I don't see a world where Toronto gets the edge in net. So prepare yourself now for takes about the goaltending. It would be incredible if Samsonov stands on his head or Wohl comes in a game and just steals the net. But ultimately, you are looking at the best tandem in hockey, and it is by far Boston's biggest advantage in the series. Ahead of everything, even like all the psychology stuff, whatever. This is it. This is the thing. That is the matchup that has the biggest divide, in my opinion, anyways. Matthews, as I outlined it, has actually dominated his minutes in the regular season against Boston this year. He really has. He's caved in Charlie McAvoy. 23 minutes of them 5-on-5. Toronto's outshot them 40-10. The expected goals is completely lopsided. It's not particularly close. To me, this series for Toronto is going to come down to a couple things. One is, can Matthews finish? Because I don't think that anybody's really going to care about the chances as much as they're going to care about the goals. That's very, very clear. But it's the other guys. It's going to be, hey, if Boston wants to load up a pairing, if they're going to be at home, right? They're going to have home ice advantage, and they're going to say, we want to take away the number one goal scorer on planet Earth. And what we're going to do is we're going to load up our top defensive pairing with McAvoy and Lindholm, which is what it was at practice. Tavares, Marner, William Nylander, and the guys that are throughout the rest of the lineup, they're going to really have to come through, but particularly those other guys. And I got to say, one of the real fascinating subplots of this entire thing is every year it's felt like, oh, the last dance. And this year there hasn't been as much of that, right? No one's spent as much time talking about last dance, and the core four breakup. It's kind of just been, no, they'll probably run it back. And if you really look at it, doesn't it make the most sense to try to get Marner done on another contract and then bring Tavares back for cheap? And if you lose to Boston, I really think that changes. That changes a lot. And especially when I read this yesterday from Kipper's article. Quote, if the rumblings are true and he's looking to surpass Nylander's 8-year, $92 million U.S. deal, what other choice do the Leafs have but to trade him? End quote. So, Kipper's pretty plugged in, especially when it comes to the Marner camp. I think if he's saying that Marner wants more than 8-92, that he's got a pretty good handle, a pretty good grasp of that. Does anybody in this market feel like that's going to be a good fit for this team? Marner on that kind of contract, the way that things are right now? Well, I certainly don't. Does that change, though, if he elevates his play during a series and he clearly looks like one of the best players on planet Earth? Like, people were a little upset about the Nylander contract, and I know not all of you, but in this series, Nylander is going head-to-head with David Pastrnak, and he makes a slightly, I think it's 0.1% or whatever, it's 1% higher salary cap percentage than David Pastrnak makes. I think it's going to come up. I think it's going to come up for Nylander if he doesn't, in easier matchups, perform and score at least to, you know, a similar degree as Pastrnak. But he's locked in. He's not going anywhere. He's got his no move. He's going to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. That's pretty clear. Marner, on the other hand, you want more than that guy. If you want more than that David Pastrnak percentage or more money than Pastrnak, you kind of have to show in the series that you can have the same impact as he has, right? And you certainly have to do it on a team that has deeper forward groups and is going to be able to match up in an easier way. And so to me, I had Sheldon Keefe as my highest guy in the stake rankings or the stake, who has the most at stake. I did that yesterday briefly with James Myrtle. Subscribe to this podcast. If you're not a regular listener, then you can hear all the pods. But I think it's actually Marner. because Marner goes out in this series. I don't see how that fits. I don't see how a big contract extension for more money than William Nylander works. No mover or not, you got to find a way to move it. So yeah, I actually think that from a legacy standpoint, from a wanting to stay with the Toronto Maple Leafs standpoint, from everything, he's probably the biggest X factor, which is weird to say when you're talking about a guy that's supposed to be one of the best 10 forwards on earth. Time to prove it. All right, quick break, and let's talk to Fudo Shinzawa, senior writer for The Athletic Boston. Are the Bruins really going to rotate their goalies, and who's in net for game one? Next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I'm always fascinated by innovation in sport, especially in hockey, because it's such a, I don't say backward sport, but it's, I wouldn't say the industry leader in innovation. And here are the Boston Bruins thinking potentially about doing a set goaltender rotation. I don't know if I buy it. Fudo Shinzawa, senior writer for The Athletic Boston. Good morning. Thanks for making time, man.
You got it. Good morning.
Okay, so let's start right away. Who's in net game one? Because it is a fascinating choice. You got, you know, the Vezina winner, Ullmark, who has played amazing down the stretch, but Swayman has the track record against the Maple Leafs as of late. Who do you think they lean to?
Yeah, right now that's a tough call. That could be a coin flip just because of, like you said, since the trade deadline, Linus is at a .935 save percentage. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Last eight, nine starts. Swayman is .880-something. It's below .900 last I checked since the trade deadline. But last start, he was the one guy who showed up for the Bruins against Washington in Game 81. Mm. The only guy. And he was terrific. And then, 6 weeks ago against Toronto, back-to-back, 4-1 wins, mm-hmm. Swayman in net for both. Three wins against Toronto this year has looked terrific. Best player for the Bruins, at least in the last two games against the Leafs. So, it's tough. I think Linus right now is the better goalie. So I think they will go Linus game one, but no doubt we are going to see both goalies in the first round. Maybe as early as game two. I don't know if they are considering a pure one and done rotation. It's something they've considered. Mm. It's something that they have not written off. Will we see it? Who knows? It might just be one of those things where they say, okay, let's just say Bruins win game one, Linus plays really well, then yeah, perhaps they go back to him for game two. But we're going to see both.
Yeah, this is the real point of fascination for me, though, is okay, it's easy to say you have your set goaltending rotation if Linus in game one lets in four goals and the Leafs steal one, right? You go, we're going to Jeremy Swayman. Yep, okay, got it. Hey, we said all along, this isn't a shot at Linus, you'll see him again. Great. If he steals the show in game one and you've told Swayman he's playing game two, I am curious how that plan evolves or how flexible this is going to be. The one advantage that I hate that Boston has here is that Ullmark and Swayman seem to be the best of pals and that they really do have chemistry. Like, their wives are out here making videos together, like doing the celebration. I'm like, damn it, they're really close. This is not maybe just an act that these two put on, even though they're fighting for the same, they're driving the same F1 car. There doesn't appear to be a rivalry between the two. But yeah, I guess, but like, from what you've gathered by being around the team, if, like you said it, they're going to play both guys, but how flexible do you think that's going to be? Because if it backfires, man, even for a guy like Montgomery, that's a really tough look.
Yeah, I do think there is some wiggle room built in. Like, it's not, I don't think, whatever their plan is, and Don Sweeney said yesterday that there is a plan. They know, both goalies know, goalie coach knows, head coach knows, everybody knows. They're all on board. Mm-hmm. But I do think there is some flexibility built in terms of, it's not rigid saying, okay, this is the template that they're going to follow, mm-hmm. A, B, something, whatever like that, that there is going to be some interpretation built in. And Don said yesterday that, hey, it's going to be performance and results are going to be mm-hmm. part of the decision. So, but my whole thing looking back, and this goes back to last year too, when Ullmark played all six first round games against Florida, it went horribly. Swayman was not ready from game seven. They lose, mm-hmm. they're done. This is the way that they've done it
pretty much throughout the last 2 years, mm-hmm. one and done. And then the most stressful, most demanding games come up and you fall out of routine. I don't know. That's the one hang up that I have with it. But like you said, both guys are legit friends. Jeremy was really emotional the day before the trade deadline when he was asked, hey, is that the last time that you guys are going to be doing this hug thing after win? He said, oh, I haven't even thought about it. And then Lena stays the next game. Jeremy goes out after the win, and he's saying, you stayed. And it was pretty neat to see. And they are the best of friends. And who knows, maybe this is it. Like, Linus has one more year left on his deal. Jeremy is up after this season. This could be it for them. But, yeah, that's. But when you look at the big picture, this is, like, number five on the list of Bruins' concerns. Like, they're going to be okay in goal regardless.
Yeah.
They've got some other issues that they've got to deal with.
Oh, that's good. I like this. That's a great segue. Let's go through one through, what was it? You said the fifth? So let's go through one through four. What's number one? What's the biggest concern?
Power play. It hasn't been good. They mixed it up for game 82. Like, it was pretty late to be making major changes. They took McAvoy off the point on the first power play, mm-hmm. put Kevin Shattenkirk up there, and he was good. They looked pretty good. And they got results. Okay, granted, game 82 against Ottawa Senators. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's that. But that brings in the whole mix of Kevin Shattenkirk. Okay, he's done well. He plays a good offensive brand as your quarterback on PP1. Well, then, if he plays, then he's most likely going to have to play his offside on the third pair. He's a right shot D. He might have to play with Andrew Peak on the third pairing. That's not ideal. But if they think that their power play is that much in need of an augment, then that's what they have to do. They have Parker Wotherspoon, who's a lefty, in the mix as your extra D, and that's another tough decision that they have. Is Shattenkirk's offense that critical that you're going to risk him being a little bit compromised on defense playing his offside? So there's that. Are they going to be able to score? Okay, we all know Leafs have the advantage on offense, but I think it's fair to say that the Bruins have the advantage in defense and goal. Well, can they take advantage of what can be perceived as weaknesses in terms of Toronto's defense and goaltending? Who knows? This is a team that, okay, I don't think David Pastrnak is at 100% health. After that, it's... You don't really have consistent goal-scoring presence up front for the Bruins. Issue for them. So I think those are the two real major kind of red light concerns that they have in terms of power play and offense. Maybe there are some lineup issues, too. Johnny Beecher, one of their guys, they might bring him up from Providence. He might be in the mix. James Van Riemsdyk has not played well for a long time, but he's playing against his former team. He has experience. He can put the puck in net in terms of being a net front guy on the power play. But there's a decision there. So, and then one of the things is, can they win down the middle without a go-to center? Charlie Coyle-Pavelzaka done great. They outpointed Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci from last year. They have more points than them, career years for both Charlie and Pavel. But they've never been 1-2 playoff centers. It's going to be demanding. And can they emerge and elevate to playoff level? We'll see.
What do I got to tell you? I do 2 hours a day. I also do a Leafs postgame show. That was the most enjoyable couple of minutes that I've had doing this all season long, was hearing you go through all the Bruins' anxieties and pitfalls and potential issues. Like, I think I speak for me and all of the listenership where we say thank you for that, because it's always a great reminder, especially as an anxious fan base, that you're not alone in this, and that, you know, Boston fans, despite winning in the regular season and despite the playoff success, have their own anxieties and own problems, right? It's always a grass is greener thing, right? You look into your neighbor's yard and go, wow, life seems so peachy there. If I could only have what he has. And then you hear that couple of minutes and go, you know, I feel much better. I feel much better, more so from your problems rather than the things that they have here. So, okay, there's two things there specifically I want to touch on. One is, I saw that at practice yesterday, the Bruins were going with the Lindholm-McAvoy pairing, which kind of makes sense if you look at the play or the regular season track record of the way Matthews and McAvoy lined up, which was Matthews, despite them losing the games, he dominated the matchups. And so maybe they want a little bit more there and put stress on Toronto at least to start. The question is, like, the trickle-down effect for the blue line is what? Because it from, again, an outsider who doesn't watch every single Bruins game's perspective, it looks pretty thin if you decide to do that. Do you think that they're actually going to be comfortable putting their two best guys together and letting the chips fall with the rest?
Yeah, probably at home. We're going to see that first two games in terms of putting their it's slam dunk, no discussion. These are your two best defensemen in Lindholm and McAvoy. And then on top of that, who knows? I would imagine that they would match up Coyle, Marchand, and DeBrusque against Matthews. Just that big of a threat. But, of course, that's the issue there is, okay, if you hope for a wash, if you're the Bruins there, then you're going to be compromised in terms of Marner and Nylander. Like, how do you negate that? That's a question. Grizzlick and Carlo right now will be your second pair. Carlo has had a good year, and he's a good defensive defenseman, first wave PK guy. Grizzlick, he's had an off year. They've really liked how in past years how he's played with McAvoy, just because they've been so good at suppressing shots and taking away opportunities up ice and controlling possession. But it just hasn't been like that for Grizzlick and McAvoy this year. So that's been an issue. Grizzlick was the odd man out last year, if you can believe it, in game one against Florida, because they had down the left side Lindholm, Dmitry Orlov, Derek Forbert. Well, Orlov gone, Derek Forbert injured. So, and Grizzlick, they've always had an issue just because of his size in the playoffs, that this is a guy that can be targeted in terms of the forecheck. Mm-hmm. And he can be put in tough situations just because physically he's just not what he's built for. That's going to be an issue. Now maybe we'll see different matchups, especially in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll put Grizzlick and McAvoy together and then use Lindholm and Carlo perhaps against Matthews, because they've played together a lot this year. But so they've tried different things, and I'm sure these pairings are not set in stone after game one.
Then the other part of it is you insinuate that Pastrnak might not be at 100%. Like everybody always talks about the health. Oh, it's how healthy are you? How healthy are you come Stanley Cup playoffs? Yeah, how healthy are the Boston Bruins?
Relatively okay. Yeah, I don't think he's just. It hasn't been right for a little bit here, and I would have to think that he's just trying to fight through something. Forbert, he's on a rehab assignment in the American League. Who knows whether we'll see him. Justin Brazo, former Leafs property, they say he's week to week, very, very unlikely to start the series, but this is a player that came from nothing and then really was a lock for fourth line right wing and net front work on the second power play. So that's, in relative terms, okay, yeah, fourth liner, former ECHL guy. But that's a big loss for the Bruins to have that kind of stability, and they don't have that kind of size. Now, Justin's not a traditional 6'5" just banger, but when he gets the puck, it's really hard to get it off his stick. Other than that, I think they're relatively okay. I'm sure there's some nicks and dings that go unnoticed that they're treating, but yeah, relatively they're in good shape.
Hey, Fluto, thanks so much for the time today, man. Enjoy the series.
You got it. My pleasure, Jay.
Take care. Fluto Szczęsa, the senior writer for The Athletic Boston. Whew, that felt good. That felt great. I'm not going to lie. That made me incredibly happy. I don't like anybody getting injured, okay? But I frankly, I'm well past the point of giving one crap of, oh, well, you want to beat them at their best. No. I don't care. David Pastrnak's on 100%. Music to my ears. Because, yes, that guy is a bona fide Leaf killer. What I said in the block prior about Mitch Marner, yeah, I would like to double down on that take, knowing that Boston is very likely to take their best two defensemen and load them up against Austin Matthews. That those two guys, Matthews playing 20-plus minutes, out of Coyle's 20-plus minutes, out of Lindholm's 20-plus minutes, the vast majority in Boston are going to be played against that man. The Boston Bruins strategy, if that is the case, is saying if we can take away Matthews, Bertuzzi, and Domi, if we can draw even there, hell, if we can win those minutes, because they're not just going to be looking at it that way. They're thinking win those minutes against the Stars, we can beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. How is that not the most bulletin board material? Like, who cares about quotes? Who cares about what the media says? Who cares? Who cares what your Twitter mentions say, the doubters that you've had, the contract insinuations, all of it? The Boston Bruins have told you, Mitch Marner, you, John Tavares, you, William Nylander, that they can match up with you just fine with a pairing centered around Brandon Carlo. Okay. Good player. Like, really good player. Like, don't want to understate it. But ultimately what they are saying to you is the premise that the Leafs are going to get more secondary scoring or that their star players can face more advantageous matchups, they're not overly concerned about it. Spread the wealth all you want. We don't believe in your wealth. There you go, Mitch. There you go, Willie. There you go, John. Go dominate your minutes. Okay, now the other side of things. How healthy are the Leafs? And who are they playing game one? Kristen Shilton of ESPN next. So I mentioned it. The Fluto interview made me feel a little bit better. I don't know how I couldn't. He's like, here's what we're talking about in Boston. Is the blue line any good? Can our forwards score? Is Pastrnak healthy? I'm like, that feels good. That felt good. Kristen Shilton, reporter for ESPN. Please don't make me feel any worse. All right? Don't ruin my high of feeling like the Boston Bruins are a little bit more human. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, we're a day before Stanley Cup playoffs, so I could not be better. It's my favorite time of the year. It's busy, but it's great. So, yeah, thanks for making time. So let me start with this, okay? I asked Flew how healthy the Bruins were. He said pretty healthy, but maybe Pastrnak's dealing with something. The Leafs are missing McMahon. They were missing Yarncroc. Edmondson's been dealing with stuff. Reeves left the game early the other night. Domi wasn't playing. How healthy is this group? How many of those guys do you expect in the lineup for game one?
Well, you know how players will always caveat being out of the lineup in the regular season by saying, oh, well, if this was a playoff game, I definitely, you know, could have been there. And I think there's, you know, just my instinct is that there's going to be quite a bit of that for the Leafs. I think some of it at the end of the regular season, when you already kind of your fate's decided, there's not a lot on the line. Why put yourself in a precarious position, right? Like if something's nagging you, bothering you, you may as well take yourself out now so that you can be, you know, fresh and ready to go. I know the Leafs don't practice until a little later this afternoon, and I'm sure there'll be more clarity there at that point about the lineup for tomorrow. But I think everyone at this stage is dealing with something, and I know that's a cliche, but it's so true. You've been at this, you know, for like 8 months, and your body takes a beating. So in that way, I think playoffs can be there's parity there because everyone's dealing with something. And I wouldn't read too much into some of the more recent exits with, you know, some of those Leaf players, because I do think even Edmondson, when he was out previously, said if it was playoffs, I would have been there. But, you know, rest up now. And so then you can be at your best when it counts the most. So we'll see later today. But I wouldn't be too worried that the Leafs are going to be shorthanded when they get into the game tomorrow.
Yeah, my only fear with play through it, if it was the playoffs, is like guys have played on broken legs. So you go.
Well, yeah. I mean, can't imagine that that's pleasant, but it does it does up the ante for everyone else. Right?
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, your knee was torn this entire time? Oh, that's good. Oh, you actually had a shoulder that was in complete disrepair and that immediately needs surgery? Okay, like, yeah, it's not other sports, right, where it's, oh, well, actually, I was playing through a little bit of knee soreness. It's like, no, it can be quite bad. And so I Like, I think that I'm reading that way with the Domi stuff is that it was being uber cautious. I think that given Edmondson's history and even when he came to the Leafs, that they and his import in the series, that they were uber cautious with him as well. The guy that I'm most curious about really is Yarncroc, because he's been out of the lineup for a significant period of time. And I'm curious if this was one where they decided, okay, you know, weeks of added rest, like weeks of added nothing here. But now to kind of just jump into this series and have to be, you know, someone that plays with a level of physicality, someone that, you know, likes to go into the corners and plays an important defensive role for them. Like, he's a pretty pivotal player that we haven't seen in a while. Like, what is your read on him specifically?
Yeah, it's an interesting case, especially because I do think that the Leafs' depth up front is better this year than maybe it has been in seasons past. And we've seen a lot more juggling, a lot more of Sheldon Keefe playing with his lineups and matchups and guys coming in and out of the lineup. And I wonder if that maybe played a role in how long Yarncroc was out and just, and then now with their comfortability with kind of slotting him right back in, is that's how the Leafs have sort of managed their roster throughout the year. It's just, it's sort of a, you know, we'll see mentality of who's even going to be dressed from, you know, on a nightly basis. So I think with Yarncroc, you know, he's a veteran guy. He's someone who's used to playing those filler roles, you know, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but just, you know, he can plug in second line, third line, fourth line, like wherever you need him. He's, you know, he's played on the top line. He can kind of do it all. And so in that sense, it's not as, you know, it's not necessarily as prescriptive as a guy who only can excel in a bottom six role or someone who really can't produce unless they're playing with, you know, a Mitch Marner or an Austin Matthews. I think those guys you can't have out for too long because they really need like that confidence and they need to, you know, continue to get those reps. But someone like Yarncroc, I can see him sliding back in and being able to play his game because that's been his MO his whole career. And he's been able to, I think, flourish regardless of the situation. So he isn't someone that I would worry about. I think Domi was really just starting to find his game playing with Matthews and Bertuzzi. So that one, you're almost a little bit more worried if he had to miss time and come back. Not that, you know, as we said, not that we're too concerned about that at this point, but I would think someone like him who's maybe just found the sweet spot here in a role to get out of that and then step back in could be a little tougher. So again, you're if you have the Leafs, you're hoping from his perspective that this isn't something that's going to keep him out for any length of time.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you point him out now because Domi's was especially fascinating because he was playing so well with Matthews and Matthews was hunting 70 goals, right? You would think that Domi, understanding yeah, Leafs history and being kind of a part of that, would have wanted to be there for Matthews and ends up missing these two games. And so, yeah, I he's also basically the lever that keeps the Leafs from doing the Marner-Matthews thing, which has not worked for them time and time again come postseason time. So, yeah, you're right. He's probably out of this entire group the most critical in terms of hoping that he is at 100% and that this was uber, uber cautious, even though, yeah, like maybe... maybe that wasn't the case given some of the circumstances. Okay, so lineup stuff. How do you think that the Leafs ice their blue line for game one?
Oh, my goodness. If I had a crystal ball for that, I think you have to look at the Bruins and you have to prioritize physicality. And I know that that's, again, it's one of those words where you're like, okay, but what does that mean? And it really just is guys who are willing to go in the corners. It's guys who are willing to lay the hit, who are going to take the hit, who are going to be a little nasty, who are going to get up in somebody's face. And every player is capable of that, but you need the guys where that's really what they're comfortable doing. Because the most important thing, I think, for this blue line, given how, you know, shaky it's been really for most of the year, is that guys need to be in roles that they feel good about. And that's where you're thinking they got Edmondson for this reason. They have Lyubushkin who can do a little bit more of that. You have a veteran presence there as well in those guys who have just, you know, this isn't their first rodeo. And you do have players in that blue line group who, you know, haven't had as much experience. So I think you're prioritizing what is going to, you know, help you the most, and especially if you've got a Bruins team that maybe they are a little fragile. They finished the regular season on kind of a sour note with those last two losses. You want to come in with, you know, and pack the punch. You want that, you know, that presence to come out in that first game, take the crowd out of it in Boston. And a lot of that is, you know, as well, that their blue line is strong. You know, Charlie McAvoy is still, you know, one of the best in the game. And, you know, Hampus Lindholm maybe hasn't had a great season, but, you know, or as good as in the past, but you know that they're going to be coming. So for the Leafs to match, I think you're prioritizing your bigger bodies, and you see how that goes for game one, game two. And, you know, you do have time to change things around. But I just think that you look at the players who have had some success lately that may not include TJ Brody at this point. Certainly, and that's a whole nother story. But I think if you're Keith, you've got to be looking at what, you know, is going to give us the best chance to set a tone in game one. And that's how you're going to put your blue line together from there.
This is the weirdest thing, is that when TJ Brody plays, he gets 20 plus minutes. Keith clearly likes him. He has clearly entrusted him with all of these important roles, or such an important role when he has played. And yet it really feels like he is the odd man out heading into the series. It is definitely I'll believe it when I see it, but it doesn't at least feel to you like, especially on the road, that he is the leading candidate to sit? Like, if we're doing it odds, you said no crystal ball, but if we're doing odds, maybe I'm sure you hate doing that as a reporter, but you're like, no. I deal in facts, but odds, I'm a gambler. Odds are he feels like the guy that's out in game one because of what you just outlined.
You know, and I don't think that that's an incorrect assumption. I think that's a good way to look at it, because this is the thing. If Keith puts him in the lineup and you give him some small role, or you're not using him the way he's used to, does that affect him? Which you, if you do need him in the postseason, you know, if you're going to put him in, you've got to let him play. That's kind of my, I guess if I was a coach and if it was up to me, I would just think, you know, if you try to, again, if you try to change a veteran player out of what he's used to, and you try to cut his role and you're cutting his minutes, and it's not something where, you know, maybe it's a Mark Giordano situation where, you know, you're pushing 40 and things are just not where they used to be. But this is a guy who should still relatively be close to his prime, and it's just not happening. He knows that he's just not playing well. And if you take away that opportunity, even when he's in the lineup, I just think that you're killing the confidence. And then when you do need him at a critical moment, you know, you're game seven, you've got an injured player, and you're like, okay, Brody, you got to go in and play 22 minutes. You can play 22 minutes in a month. Well, that's tough. You know, those are tough minutes to have to pick up at the last minute. So I think Keith is trying to balance as best he can where Brody is at, sort of in his game, and then also guarding the Leafs against facing disappointment down the road if they need to call on him and he's just, you know, not up to the task.
Well, that's the other part of this, is I when it comes to calling on him, you don't want to, I was talking to Jason Buchel about this earlier, is like, you don't want to have the feeling of panic if you drop game one. But also, like, barring an injury, or like, sorry, regardless of an injury, or these guys stay fully healthy, it feels to me like it would be very, very fluid. Like, we could end up not seeing TJ Brody in game one and then seeing him in game two, and he could be playing 20 plus minutes again. Like, is that the sense that you're getting as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, Sheldon Keefe has been doing that with his roster all year. He's been just shuffling players in and out based on all kinds of factors. He talks about fatigue, matchups, you know, what the video team is showing him, you know, from the previous game, and who's even matching up well. You know, sometimes you get into a playoff series and guys suddenly have great chemistry, or things are working, or you see, hey, you know, I really liked, you know, this line was really working well, or maybe you have to make in-game adjustments and you end up finding something that you like. So I wouldn't count anything out, especially in the first round. And I, you know, it's funny just, you know, going around the league of late and talking to guys, and every player will tell you the first round is hell. It is the hardest. It is the most brutal. It is the biggest, the most mind games, because once you get to like the conference final, everyone's seen your tricks. Everybody knows what you got up your sleeve because you've been doing it. There's not as much time as the playoffs go on. The first round, because there's so many teams playing and the schedule is more dragged out, just because, you know, we've got 16 teams that work, and then you have eight, and then there's four. And so at that point, it's just, you're not practicing. It just is what it is. So this is still the time where in the first round, you're still going to see those moving parts a lot more than you would probably down the line, because at that point, if you don't have it, you don't have it. And you wouldn't be there if you didn't. So this is the time to figure it out. And I mean, obviously you'd like to have figured it out before now, but if there is, you know, a time that you've got to do it, it's the first couple of games and you make those adjustments. And we've seen it go both ways. We've seen teams come out strong in the first two games and then they blow it. And we've seen teams struggle in the beginning and then they find their groove. So I'm sure that this series will present us with its own dramatics as we go along as well.
Do you think that Nylander starts game one on his own line?
Oof. I would think yes. I will say if Domi is there, I think there's a better chance of that. If for whatever reason, if they are still dealing with some key injuries in that department, maybe not. But yes, I would say so.
Yeah. The question is, like, clearly he's going to play up with Marner and Tavares if, like, that's the case. Like, he's going to get his minutes there. What's your sense of the concern that they've had over the course of these last 11 games? And I think it even actually extends a little bit beyond that. It's just that the 11 games is easy because that's how long it's been since he scored a goal. Keith mentioned the whole line about, hey, he's done with regular season games. But this is a guy who was playing for a pretty meaningful milestone in the regular season and, yeah, just seemingly hasn't had his game as of late. Like, what? It's one thing to say that publicly, but what do you think that they're saying privately?
Well, I think this is just Nylander, right? I mean, go back through his career. He's prone to streaks like this where he can't score. And it usually comes from the fact that he's not necessarily focused on the defensive side of his game. And we saw earlier in the year where he was playing really well, I thought, at both ends. And now you see that start to dip. And then that's where when he gets too focused on scoring, it's like he can't. And I think if I know from my years of really, you know, being on the beat and following the team and you can just see it in him is that, you know, when there's something for him to chase, he often will step up his game, but it comes from the defensive side too. And I don't know if these last 11 games have necessarily shown that same detail because he's probably worried now about not scoring. And I think it's a lot in his head, but it's also Nylander understands as well as anyone that the playoffs are so short. And that's the thing is that this series is going to start tomorrow and then, you know, you're done in a week potentially. So it's like, it's now or never, kid. It's like, you got to do it now. And it's not about the regular season. It's not about anything anyone's accomplished there. But he knows what makes him successful. And if he's just willing to do it, I think William Nylander will be just fine. It's just you've got to take it out of your head that your only value is scoring because it's not. He can be a very, capable defensive player as well when he wants to be. And it's just a matter of getting him to prioritize that as well as trying to put pucks in the net too.
Yeah, and again, we've seen it in the playoffs where he has looked dominant. He's looked like the Leafs' best forward at times. We've seen even this year what it looks like when he is in full power mode and you go, wait, all right, don't push back on a contract that plays him more than Pastrnak. I will say this is that is a dynamic that I'm very curious about in this series is he is very much the slightly baby brother to Pastrnak and he got a little bit more money than him. He used him as a comparable and Pastrnak's bona fides at this point are irrefutable and he is a Leaf killer. And I have to wonder, or I do wonder what his relationship is like with him in moments like this and how much he is going to pride himself on trying to outplay that guy who is the Bruins' most important piece outside of their goaltenders in this series.
Well, you kind of just almost answered the question in that William Nylander is not the Leafs' most important piece outside of their goaltenders. You know, it's a different role that Pastrnak plays for Boston than what William Nylander plays for Toronto. And I think that that's where the comparable almost gets difficult because for Nylander, he's not going to get necessarily the same opportunity as Pastrnak will in terms of minutes, in terms of how he's deployed or used or line mates, things like that. It's Pastrnak's responsibilities to the Bruins just extend further, I think, than Nylander. So it's, you know, contract-wise, that's based on so many factors. And I think players understand that. Is there some pride in wanting to, you know, one up a, you know, they obviously are friends off the ice. Is there some sort of competition there? Maybe, but mostly I think at this point for Nylander, it's like the guy just would like to win something, you know, and as good as, you know, he got his, you know, you get the money and you get that security and you know that the team believes in you. But when it comes to, his value to the Leafs. It's just a different, I just think it's a different role or a different scenario than what Pastrnak means to Boston. And hey, if Nylander were to become in this series the Bruins killer, I don't think anybody's going to be upset about that. But at this point, after how long he's gone without scoring, the thing is you just want confident Nylander. And I don't think he's a guy who often lacks for it, but this would be the worst time of year for him to be trying to say, I have to be Pastrnak, when right now you're not even showing the best version of William Nylander. So be the best William Nylander, and that's what the Leafs need. And let Austin Matthews go out there and avenge his lack of 70 goals, and because he is the David Pastrnak of the Leafs, right? Mm-hmm. So let him do that and let Nylander, do what he does best, and I think then the Leafs will be all right.
What are you most personally interested in this series? Can even be something we touched on.
I think just seeing how the matchups go. I really think that, the Leafs got better performances from their stars last year in the first round, and it just didn't carry over as much into the second. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they respond to all of it, to the history that the Leafs have with Boston, to the fact that they haven't beat them yet in the regular season. I really would just like to see how the top six on each side feel each other out to start here, and just where it goes from there. And who's going to be the guy who steps up for the Leafs? That's my other thing, is that who's going to be sort of their ace in the hole, who maybe we don't expect, we don't see coming, but is just going to be someone who finds their legs in this series and is able to really have an impact for them. So I think there's a lot to like about it. I don't know if it's going to be as maybe feisty as it's been in years past. This is a different Bruins team than the Leafs have been used to, and I think the Leafs have a good chance, but I'm really curious to see how these matchups go in the first two games.
Yeah. Okay, last one from me. You just wrote regrades from the deadline. Which of these two teams that barely did anything at the deadline do you think has more regret?
I would think probably Boston at this point. I think maybe some of their depth hasn't been as strong as it has been in years past. I think adding Maroon, I don't know what he's going to be capable of in the postseason. Obviously, he's got the pedigree, and that's something that they wanted. They knew he was going to be hurt or he wasn't going to be available for most of the regular season. So they got him for this time of year. But other than that, you didn't really add a whole lot, and you're counting on a team essentially that didn't get anything done last year to have a complete turnaround this time around, and that's without some key veterans there. So I would think probably Boston. I think that the Leafs were in better shape just going in. I think they had what they could. Their decision-making was mostly focused on the back end, which was probably for the best. And I do think that Edmondson could do something if he is put in the right role and he gets to use some of that physicality. But I would think Boston might have more regrets about just not adding a little bit more for maybe just their middle six, their bottom six, just players that can slot in and help out a little bit more of that veteran presence. But hey, maybe Pat Maroon will surprise me and be a huge factor. So that's why we play the games, right? But yeah. I guess we'll see.
I hope not. That would make me miserable if that actually happened, if that played out that way, that it was Pat Maroon that was the X factor in the series. Kristen Chilton, reporter for ESPN. Thanks so much for making time today. Enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Thanks.
I really did settle on this today. Bruins didn't do as much at the deadline. Bruins are the team that has their best player a little dinged up. Didn't love the Domi thing now that I thought about it, because Matthews was, like, in the moment I went, it's Mitch Marner. He's going to play with Mitch Marner. He's outscored opponents 5-on-5 with Matthews. Like, hold on, I actually had this written down. This was at least before the final two games of the season, but it was like 45-20-something, those two guys at even strength. Like, they dominated. So I always kind of looked at it as, oh, it's a good way to get Mitch going, and Domi had his moment. He's one away. He's probably going to get it. And now in hindsight, I'm looking at it after that interview going, maybe Domi is a little bit more hurt, because that would have been something that he probably very much wanted to be on the ice for, and he also wanted to help facilitate. I'm guessing that in his mind, he also believes that he is a better playmaker than Mitch Marner. And I don't mean that in like a derogatory or an offensive way. I just mean that in a, like, that's the kind of mindset that you have to have as a professional athlete, right? Especially somebody that's that caliber and that played on the same junior team and, you know, was also a high pedigree pick and a scorer, a playmaker, like all that stuff. Of course you feel that way. So, yeah, a little more nervous about that than I was before today. But ultimately, a lot of this has been, right, reminder, goaltending matters a lot in Stanley Cup playoffs, almost to an infuriating degree where you know that that is a scenario that is in front of you. A scenario is that the Leafs are the far better team, or at least even the marginally better team, and the discrepancy in net comes back to bite you in the ass and looks ugly for this team, and it sends you in an offseason where people are just going, run it back, and hopefully Wohl is the savior. And boy, I saw again, Kipper in his article said that the Leafs might even bring back Matt Murray next year because of the depth in the goaltending market right now. And I went, okay. I guess if he's backup and he's only going to play, 30 games, maybe Mr. Glass stays healthy. I don't know. We'll see. Is he the Martin Jones of this team, or is he the backup goaltender? That would be a big part of the decision for me. But either way, you go back into that mode where it's, can you find the goaltender? Can you get the goaltending? Like, the odds are that you're never going to have goaltending as good as what Boston has right now. So I don't, as infuriating as it can be, I just don't like using it as a catch-all for this. Even though it's, again, probably more important than anything else. But yeah, that's the thing, is the matchups. You're on the road, and Boston has still decided, seemingly, that they are going to load up defensively against your top group. And what are the other guys going to do? If you're going to have two other lines that have scoring depth on them, like that, when I think that Kristen said it during that interview, Toronto's had more depth at scoring than they've had in years past. That is unequivocally true. That has to show up in the playoffs. The toughness quotient and I actually really do believe in that. I really believe that this team is better suited for playoff hockey. Like the Edmondsons and the Bertuzzis and the Domies and even the Reeveses when he's in these matchups, like, those guys, the mentality and the physicality that they bring, the fact that, you know, Jason mentioned today that Boston outhit Toronto by 100 this year, right? 100 more hits as a group. I feel like Toronto is better suited than ever before to deal with some of that stuff throughout the lineup. The stars still matter the most, though. But yes, the rest of the lineup, the rest of the secondary scoring, I don't think Toronto is going to win this series if the games are 2-1. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm completely wrong. But if you're Toronto and you're a fan, you kind of want these series to be like 4-3, 5-2 Toronto. That they're getting a bunch of goals throughout the lineup, and it just feels like Boston is the team that can't find the right matchups. They just can't get enough players out there that can hang with Toronto's depth, the Toronto's offensive depth. That's what it's got to be. And so much of that charge, like, again, I really think Auston Matthews is going to do what Auston Matthews is going to do. I really do. And that, it's unfair to say this for me, but because I've said it in the past, like, nobody cares about the maybes or the almosts or the what ifs. And I think that if he goes through an entire series where it's like that, people are going to judge him. But I'm just pretty confident he's going to score goals, and that even in the toughest matchups, this guy who has been dealing with the toughest matchups all season long and scored 69 goals is going to find a way to persevere. To me, it's more about, like, if it does go down to a game 7, is he able to do that? Like, because I think that there is a little bit of an added mental hurdle to that, seeing as he doesn't have any. But I just trust the version of this player that we've seen all year. I don't trust as much what we've seen from Marner and Nylander as of late. Tavares I've just kind of settled in on, and had the biggest playoff goal for them in over 20 years. So, yeah. I just think that I know what I'm going to get from him more than I know what I'm going to get from the other two guys. That scares me a bit, but it also is reason for optimism. Like, if we're talking about flipping the switch, those two guys, more than anyone else on this entire roster, have to flip the switch. Nylander and Marner. I'm hyper-fixated on them because I cannot see how anyone could come to any conclusion that they're not the two most important players in the series, in a way, outside of the goaltenders and the best, like, the Pastrnak-Matthews direct matchup, or Matthews-McAvoy, if you want to put it that way. They are the true X-factors in the series, and they shouldn't really be viewed as X-factors. They should be viewed as bona fide, dominant, top players in the league. So, yeah, go out and dominate. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's come back and close the show up with what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So quickly, before I hit on what we missed, I'll do my draft, my series draft, because obviously, Leafs Bruins is one. But I kind of want to go through like how I would prioritize these rankings, because it's always fun to do it. Normally I do it with guests, but I didn't have time today. Okay, so JD's Stanley Cup playoff preview in terms of NHL Center Ice, Sportsnet Plus rankings of how you should watch these series. One, Leafs Bruins, duh. Like, obvious answer for the number one series. I need to get into it. Two, it stars Golden Knights. It is. It's like, I'd like to say the Canadian markets, and here's the truth, is that truthfully, it's McDavid, because I am always going to be most fascinated by McDavid, but kind of, Oilers are the Kings' big brothers. And if you're talking about a fan base that should be pissed off about the playoff format and is always ending up with the same thing, it's the Los Angeles Kings, because year in, year out, they go, here's Connor McDavid in the first round when he's most fresh, going to just rip your team apart and just obliterate you. Okay, good. I don't think that any of these things are predetermined, but I would say out of the most shocking results, that wouldn't be one. Clearly the number one most shocking result, in my opinion, would be the New York Rangers losing to the Washington Capitals. If that ends up happening, you go, oh my God, that's embarrassing. You cannot have that. You genuinely cannot have that. But that's why that series is, it's not dead last, actually. It's really not dead last, because I think that Hurricanes Islanders is eye poison for anybody that isn't Justin Bourne, or like, it's just like, that's not aesthetically pleasing. There's just nothing about that I want to see. I'm sorry. There's nothing compelling about that series to me. I don't want anything to do with it. So that's actually dead last. But yeah, okay, so if I'm not saying McDavid, I'm saying from an interesting standpoint of like, man, first round matchup between two teams that I think could absolutely win the Stanley Cup, and I'm not just going to go double Atlantic dip or McDavid dip. I'm saying it stars Golden Knights. It's really compelling to see the Vegas players all come, well, not all, but specifically Mark Stone, coming back, shockingly returning for game one. Surprise of the century, returning for game one, and these two teams, two absolute heavyweights, going toe-to-toe. Dallas with, I think, a ton to prove. Just deep teams, good teams, physical teams. Teams with, you know, real skill. That's a fun series. Then it's, I'm just going to say, I'll watch McDavid. Like, it's McDavid and it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I can't put him any lower than three. He's the most fascinating figure in all of hockey, and I can't wait to watch him every single time he plays. He makes me excited to watch the game in a way that no other player in the NHL does, and that includes Nathan MacKinnon. Three is I want to say Tampa, Florida, for the reasons that I said for Dallas, Vegas, but I'm going to put them one slot lower and go with the Avalanche and Jets. Okay, Jets have had a tough year. Jets have had a tough year. They had to watch the team that stole their team lose that team finally and be reminded that they went through that suffering for the Arizona project. And all we ever really talked about them was your goalie's good and your fans don't show up. That's like the only attention that they got. So I'm giving them more attention come Stanley Cup playoff time. I'm putting them in the next tier down. It's Nathan MacKinnon. It's Cale Makar. It's this Avalanche team that might not have any goaltending versus the team with goaltending. And if the Stanley Cup, hey, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you're saying, oh, well, we got goalied. Yeah, it's an easier case to be made for you if the Avs choke this one away or the Avs lose this one because of goaltending, because Connor Hellebuck is so important. And then it's a tougher case to be made if the Avs go on to win this series and overcome the best goaltender on the planet and still find a way to out-talent their group because, you know, they've got way more depth at forward. Sounds a little familiar. So, yeah, it's kind of the Western Conference case of Leafs Bruins. But, yeah, next. Panthers Lightning has to be. It should be higher. It's, man, what a hell of a first round. This is like a truly incredible first round. There's only two stinker series, and one of them isn't even that much of a stinker because it still is Ovechkin, it still is the Rangers, and it's a compelling market, and it's a compelling like historical figure. So, like, that doesn't hurt me. The only one that I probably will watch zero games of is Carolina Islanders. Like, I just don't see. Like, I'm flipping back to that game. Everyone's like score checking that one. But then when it's done, don't quiz me on anything that happened in that because I can guarantee you that will be dead last in terms of the minutes that I give it. And then, yeah, ahead of Rangers, it's the Canucks and Preds. Maybe that should have been a little higher, but yeah, because I want to see if the Canucks can take what was a big step forward in the regular season and translate that into the playoffs. So yeah, those are the rankings. Leafs, Bruins, 1. Stars, Golden Knights, 2, a tenuous 2, I want to say the gap between these two, so the rest of these series is very thin, but yeah, Stars, Golden Knights, 2, kind of a liar too, though, because I'll certainly watch more of McDavid than any of these. I'm going to watch every second of McDavid. So liar 3 and liar 2, and then I'm going Avs, Jets, Panthers, Bolts, which again, kind of a lie because I'll want to end up seeing more of that because if the Leafs do move forward, I want to know exactly what's going on in that series a little bit more. And then Canucks, Preds, then Rangers, Caps, and a hearty dead last. Hardy, Canes, Isles, which, by the way, if I had Merrick on right now, that would be his number one choice. He would sell me on 18 different things as to why that series is the most compelling as the hockey hipster who would tell me that thing's so good. Anyways, you want to do NBA power rankings with me, Armin? Like, I know that you care more about this than about the Stanley Cup playoff rankings.
Well, can I ask you a Stanley Cup playoffs follow-up?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Is the Stanley Cup, objectively, the greatest trophy in sports?
Yeah.
Actually?
Yeah, of course, not even close. I watched an old commercial. I don't even know what year it was from. It was floating around social media. It's the one where it's some of the game's greatest players and greatest winners starting to say their names. So it's like M-E. S, S, and then it translates to, it flips over and it's G, R, E, and O, R, you know, and it starts going through the guys and they're like talking about their names, how that's earned on the cup, and nothing gets me sentimental. Well, I really do get sentimental for Larry O'Brien. I do, like the NBA Finals has way more. Super Bowl is like an event. It's like, you won the pageant, and it's huge stakes, huge viewership, but I don't get, like, I don't see the Lombardi and I go, oh.
Yeah.
I don't have that feeling at all. I don't see the Commissioner's Trophy in baseball and go, oh.
No.
It's between those two for me. It's like the commercials that make me cry are Stanley Cup playoffs commercials and NBA playoffs commercials. Those are the ones that make me cry. It's just, it is. It's like, it's the blood, sweat, and tears. The NBA one is just such a difference because it's always the best guys in that period of time that win, essentially. Like, it's such a rarity to not have it be like the coronation of a certain guy. It's so heavy when it gets to the finals, right? So the NBA playoffs don't get me emotional as much, but at the finals, when I see that, when they do the montage and they start showing like Bill Russell and Kobe and, you know, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson.